This is a special presentation from MSONewsSports.com. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Newell. Wednesday night, February 24th, there was a special presentation at the Abbott Public Library in Marblehead, Talking Trash for Clean Oceans. You've probably heard about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, but did you know that there is a North Atlantic Garbage Patch, too? Oceans are filled with marine debris. Man-made items including cigarette butts, plastic bottles, bags, food wrappers, rubber bands, and more. They find their way into the water. In the program at the Abbott Library, you will hear Dr. Keith Cellino, PhD, and the NOAA Marine Debris Program Coordinator in the Northeast region. He has a PowerPoint presentation. Obviously, you'll hear just the audio part of that PowerPoint presentation. He works out of Gloucester. Also, special thanks to Barbara Warren. She is the executive director of the Salem Soundwatch Coastwatch. She does handle some of the question and answer session at the end of the program. Other presenters from Salem Sound Coastwatch include Emily Flaherty, as well as Jack Nesson. And at the end of the program, there are a number of Salem students that presented their projects as far as cleaning up debris on the coastline. So let's, without any further ado, begin the program that was Wednesday night at the Abbott Library on oceans and ocean debris. This is Dr. Keith Cellino from Gloucester and from NOAA.
Thank you, Barbara. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Excellent. So my name is Keith Cellino, and I am the Northeast Regional Coordinator for NOAA's Marine Debris Program. And I will explain what all that means. I'll tell you what marine debris is, give you a general overview of what's kind of the current state of the science in terms of marine debris, and also talk about what our program does in the region and a little bit around the country. And then we'll have a little bit of time for questions. So what is marine debris? Marine debris is anything that is human-made or human-processed or human-touched that ends up in the ocean or the Great Lakes. So this is our official definition. This is in our congressional act that founded our office. And basically, it says just that. So things that are intentionally or unintentionally disposed of in the ocean or the Great Lakes. We also care about things that are upstream as well, because those things could eventually make their way to the Great Lakes or to the ocean. So where is this stuff coming from? The majority comes from land. It comes from us, right? Because it's human-made or human-touched, it's going to be mostly at a land-based source. And so it's coming from things like people littering or storm events, things that are causing debris to travel farther than it would normally. And there's also some ocean-based sources. So the fishing industry, recreational and commercial, some of their fishing gear can be left out in the ocean, and that becomes marine debris. And there's also derelict and abandoned vessels. So if a boat sinks, that is now marine debris. And then also offshore industries like the oil industry, sometimes things can fall off of oil rigs and end up being marine debris. So that's all the things that would be debris. But how much are we talking about? So there's a lot going on in this slide, but I just want you to focus on a couple things. We're talking about plastic in 2010. The amount that actually ended up in the ocean, this is an estimate, was 8 million metric tons. 8 million metric tons of plastic debris. So marine debris can be things other than plastic, but the majority is going to be plastic. And 8 million metric tons in 2010 is the estimate. What does that mean? So this is to give you a sense of what 8 million metric tons would look like. It would look like 5 of these grocery bags filled with trash for every foot of coastline in the world. 5 grocery bags of garbage for every foot of coastline. And that would be about 8 million metric tons. It's a lot of trash, a lot of debris. Who here has heard of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch? Great. Tell me something that you know about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Feel free to raise your hand and I'll call on you if you want to share something you know.
It's the scale of Texas.
So it's the size of Texas. Great.
It's growing.
It's not just in the Pacific. Great. So you sailed through it and you almost hit a piece of trash, a barrel.
Nobody wants to pay to clean it up.
Uh-oh. Okay, so the things that are out there, people thought maybe they weren't going to break down, but now they're actually breaking into smaller pieces. All right, those are all great things. Thank you for sharing. So the Great Pacific Garbage Patch is this thing that we hear about a lot. And like someone mentioned, garbage patches are not just in the Pacific, but this tends to be the one that a lot of the focus is on because it's one of the bigger areas. Perhaps the size of Texas, it might be bigger, it might be smaller. We're not exactly sure, but it tends to be in the North Pacific. There's sort of a western part of the garbage patch. And then there's an eastern part that's closer to the United States. But one misconception, I'll get to that in a sec. Gyres are areas of the ocean where the currents tend to swirl and they slow down as a result of swirling. And a lot of garbage ends up getting stuck in those currents. And that's where these garbage patches come from. So they, as a result of the currents, the garbage all accumulates in several areas of the ocean. There is one of these things, a gyre, in every major ocean. So we've got the Pacific garbage patch that we were talking about. There's also one in the North Atlantic, the South Pacific, the South Atlantic, and the Indian Ocean. So you're going to find higher concentrations of marine debris in these locations. This is what a lot of people think it looks like, though. They think that it looks like an island of trash. And this was actually posted by Ripley's Believe It or Not on Facebook. And I'd encourage you to not believe it. It's not true. Garbage patches are not islands. When you sailed through the garbage patch, could you have docked your boat?
No.
No. Unless you hit that thing. So there can be large pieces of trash, for sure. But it doesn't look like this. This picture is probably after the Japan tsunami. So it's close to shore, and the tsunami ended up carrying out a lot of debris into the coastal environment in Japan. But this is not what the middle of the ocean looks like. This is kind of what the middle of the ocean looks like. This is an image that was taken by an organization that does research in the Pacific. And this is the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It just looks like the ocean. So where's all the trash? Well, the trash ends up, once it's out in the ocean, and we had someone say this, it tends to break down into smaller and smaller pieces. So it's almost like a soup that you sprinkle pepper flakes into, and then you mix it up. Those pepper flakes aren't just at the surface. They're not just at the bottom, they're all throughout the soup now, right? And they're small pieces that would be really hard to remove easily. So that's the issue with these garbage patches. It's a lot of small pieces of debris spread over very large areas, perhaps the size of Texas or bigger. And it's from the surface all the way to the seafloor. So they're little pieces of plastic. How does that happen? Once things are out in the ocean, sunlight and wave energy, salt water, tends to break plastic apart. And so you'll get these bigger things, like a plastic bag, turning into smaller specks, turning into even smaller pieces. And that happens over time. So I mentioned that there's one of these patches in the Atlantic Ocean, so close to us. And This is data from Dr. Kara Lavender Law. She works at the Sea Education Association in Falmouth, Massachusetts. And they have a long history of going out on these great sailing vessels that they use as research platforms, and they take college students. And they have this long data set. And this is from 1986 to 2015, I believe. And they take samples of the seawater and analyze it for the small pieces of plastic. So they're just skimming the surface, and they're looking for the small things, the small pieces of plastic that are floating. And Kara always says that it's nice to have undergraduate students to actually sit there and pick through the sample, because they have to pull out every piece of plastic that's in there. So the thing to really focus on is this map. All of those dots represent samples that they took from 1986 through recently. And these black stars, there's several of them, are the equivalent of more than 200,000 pieces of plastic per square kilometer. 200,000 pieces of plastic per square kilometer. More than that. So that's a lot of small pieces of plastic. They also tried to do a cruise in 2010 that would get them as far east into the garbage patch as they could get. They were trying to find the center. Where was the highest concentration? So you can actually see this was all the old data, and then they did a cruise track that went this way to go east. This sample here, they're not sure if they found the highest concentration, but that one had 26 million pieces of plastic per square kilometer. It's a lot of pieces. Somebody didn't count 26 million pieces. They extrapolate based on what's in the sample. I hope they didn't have to do that. So actually, if you're interested, there's a documentary called Into the Gyre that profiles some of the work that they've done and gives you more information about their experience and their methods and how they get their data. So that's sort of what's going on with plastic debris and marine debris. There's a lot of it. And once it's out in the ocean, it tends to break up into smaller and smaller pieces. And it also has some impacts. So this is from a study we published last year. In the US, at least 115 species have been found to be entangled by marine debris. And globally, that number is over 200 species. So once it's out there, it's having an impact. 26 marine species have been found to eat marine debris. They'll actually ingest it, thinking it's food, or just in a big gulp that a whale's taking as it's trying to filter out some food, it'll also get a bunch of plastic. So 26 species have been found to do that. I'm sure pretty much any species you think of in the ocean has probably eaten some plastic, but these are from studies that they actually analyzed the guts of different species to see what was in there. And they found 26 different species. And this article is about a piece of a DVD case that a whale ate, and it ended up being the cause of death of that whale. Over one-third of seabird species have been found to eat plastic, or trash, or marine debris. And these are Laysan albatrosses. They nest on Midway Island, near the Hawaiian Islands. And they're absolutely beautiful creatures. No one lives on the island that they nest on, just scientists occasionally going to study the seabirds. And they eat a lot of plastic, so the ocean is carrying all of our junk to their island, and then the adult birds are feeding the chicks and giving them pieces of plastic to eat. This is a powerful image taken by Chris Jordan. He goes out and takes pictures. He also took that last picture. He realized that this picture is very depressing, and this picture is better for making you care about the animal. And it's a beautiful creature. But I'm sorry, I have to show this one as well. I'll also pass around. So like I said, scientists sometimes go out there and they're studying the seabirds. And one thing that the baby chicks do is anything that they're fed that they can't actually digest, they end up regurgitating. And the scientists were nice enough to send me a sample of what came out of a baby chick. And this was apparently one baby chick, just one regurgitation. And if you, I'll pass it around, you can take a look. Please don't open it. It doesn't smell great. And you can see what's in there. There's some natural stuff, but there's also some plastic. So some other impacts of marine debris. Derelict or ghost fishing. So when nets or lobster traps or crab pots are left at the bottom of the ocean or lost during a storm, or perhaps a boater runs over the buoy and then that trap is still down at the bottom, those things will continue to fish. They're made to catch crabs or lobsters or fish. And if no one goes and removes those things, they'll last for years and years and years. So they'll keep catching. And it's sort of like a self-perpetuating problem, right? Because it'll catch something and then something else will go in to check out what's in there, and it's kind of baiting itself. And these things can last for a long time. They can last for 8 to 10 years. And often there is a panel on there that's meant to break away so that if it were lost, that panel breaks away and the creatures could escape. That doesn't always work, but it is part of the solution for ghost gear. Gear interactions. So if you're in a sailboat and you're sailing, you could potentially hit something, right? Or if you're in a motorboat, you could potentially hit some sort of floating trash. And these two images, this is a large ship with a rope or a net tangled around its propeller. That could also happen to a smaller boat as well. And then this picture on the right is from last year's Volvo Ocean Race that stopped in Newport, Rhode Island. And the sailors actually in Newport held a discussion about marine debris because they were sailing around the globe. It's a really amazing event. And they kept seeing so much trash. And they have these high-performance sailing boats that if trash gets stuck on them, it slows them down. And this is a crazy race around the world. And really, even though they're sailing around the world, it can take just seconds between boats. And so this is actually an image. They're underway, and this guy is trying to get trash off of the bottom of the sailboat, which is not super safe. So now I'll tell you a little bit about the work that the NOAA Marine Debris Program does. This is the organization that I work for. We are relatively young for a federal government program. We were established in 2006 and then renewed in 2012. Basically, we were reauthorized, which meant that we did a good enough job for those 6 years that Congress thought we should keep doing that job. And we're celebrating our 10th year anniversary this year. So if you check out our website, there's all kinds of, look at when there were four of us and we were trying to deal with the entire country in 2006, so it's pretty entertaining. And our vision is the global ocean and its coasts free of the impacts of marine debris. So it's a really big mission, but that's what we're working towards. And our act has several mandates, things that we have to do. So the first is to identify, determine the sources of, assess, prevent, reduce, and remove marine debris. Provide national and regional coordination, that's my job. Reduce adverse impacts of lost and discarded fishing gear. Conduct outreach and education, so talking to you is part of that. And address severe marine debris events, so things like the Japan tsunami or Superstorm Sandy. And we get at that through five different ways. Removal of large debris, large and medium debris. Research into marine debris. Prevention through education and outreach. emergency response, and then regional coordination. And we're still a fairly small program. We have about 18 staff for the entire country, and the majority of us are spread out around the country in the different regions. Sure. So there's a bunch of us, all the coastal regions, including the Caribbean and the Great Lakes, Hawaii, and the Pacific Islands, Alaska. So the Northeast region for me is New York through Maine. And so I'm primarily trying to figure out who's doing what in this area and managing programs that we're funding here. And I'd say these are the three key issues in the Northeast. Derelict fishing gear, as I've mentioned already. Consumer debris. We've got a lot of population close to the coast. A lot of our trash ends up in the ocean. And storm debris, particularly things like hurricanes, Superstorm Sandy. So the way that we go about this, as I mentioned, one of the things is prevention. And you'll hear more from Salem Sound Coast Watch. The project that they're working on is a prevention project. And really, that's the best thing we can do. Because if we can prevent it from being in the ocean in the first place, it's a lot easier than trying to get it out after it's already there. We work with the International Coastal Cleanup, which is run by the Ocean Conservancy. If you've ever participated in a coast sweep cleanup here in Massachusetts in September or October, that's part of the International Coastal Cleanup and something that we've helped fund. We have a smartphone application that you can download. It's called the Marine Debris Tracker app. So if you're walking along the beach and you want to log some trash that you pick up, you can enter it into there. And it goes to the University of Georgia, where they're studying what people are picking up. We have grant programs, and we have a calendar contest that we do with kindergarten through eighth grade students. I have a few copies on the table on the way out, and you're welcome to take one. And then on our website, we have a lot of different curricula, activities for kids. We try to get into schools and give things to teachers so that they can teach their students about marine debris. We also have, these are some of the regional projects that we're funding right now. Like I said, you'll hear from Salem Sound Coast Watch. We're also working with the Gulf of Maine Lobster Foundation to look at currents in the Gulf of Maine and where trash might be going. And we're working with the University of Hartford on a college-level service learning course, which will hopefully be replicable around the country once that's finished. Removals, as I mentioned, we try to target medium to large-sized debris. And we have a competitive grant competition for this as well. And since 2006, we've funded more than 100 projects with thousands of metric tons of debris removed. And I'll show you a few examples of projects that I've been working on. This is with Hofstra University on Long Island. They're doing a salt marsh cleanup. And these are some before and after pictures as they were removing some lumber from the marsh. They were working with volunteers from local community groups. And they removed 22 metric tons just from one small part of the salt marsh. This is a project with the American Littoral Society, also down in New York. Again, working with volunteers to remove things from Jamaica Bay. And they were going after 60 large debris items. So you can see these volunteers actually carrying out a small boat. And they got 36 tons on that go around. They're currently working again. This ends this year. Their target is 59 metric tons. Some things like small boats. This was during a cleanup that I went to. It's a car tire with a parking violation boot still attached. So it's cheaper to throw the tire away than to actually pay the tickets. We're working with Cornell Cooperative Extension, also on Long Island, to remove lobster traps from Long Island Sound. So these are derelict lobster traps. No one's fishing them anymore, and they're just out there. So they work with commercial fishermen to go out and actually grab them from the bottom and pull them on board. And so the first project, they removed over 4,000 traps, 105 metric tons. And they're working now for another 5,000, another 100 tons, and that ends next month. We have two new projects that are starting up soon, one in Rhode Island near Providence, and they're going after a derelict or a abandoned barge that sank, and they're also pulling out a bunch of lumber that's at the bottom. We're also working with Stockton University in New Jersey to go after crab pots, so similar to the lobster traps, also abandoned, typically cut off by boaters running over the lines. We also fund the Fishing for Energy Partnership in the Northeast, and this is a program that allows fishers a place to dispose of old gear or broken gear, things that they don't want anymore, and it's at no cost to them. So there'll be a dumpster set up at these different locations in coastal towns or ports, and they can throw their stuff away. And it's a private-public partnership, so we're working with Covanta Energy and Schnitzer Steel, and we try to recycle whatever we can, and anything that's not recyclable goes to Covanta, and they operate waste-to-energy facilities, so it's incinerated rather than landfilled. And to date, they've removed over 1,300 metric tons of debris. I'll just skip through these. Superstorm Sandy, over 375 tons removed so far from New Jersey, New York, New York City, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. These are still ongoing, amazingly. It's been almost, 3.5 years now? This was a houseboat that it sank that was removed. This was somebody's nice new front steps that ended up in a marsh and ended up getting broken apart and thrown away. We also do some research on what's marine debris doing in the environment. So things like figuring out how much microplastics, the small pieces of plastic, are actually out there. Working with the National Park Service to take samples of their sand if they have beach locations, because we want to know how much plastic is actually in the sand at different beaches around the country. We're also looking at socioeconomic impacts. So if you show up to a beach to spend a day in the summer and it's really dirty, you probably don't want to be there. So we're looking at how does marine debris actually affect tourism in coastal communities. And then a few other things. We're doing some fishing gear research in Chesapeake Bay, and we released topic papers about different issues. So the entanglement numbers that I shared and the ingestion numbers that I shared, those are found in some papers that we released last year. I'm working on one now about invasive species hitching a ride on marine debris, particularly the Japan tsunami. A lot of stuff ended up in the ocean, and that was obviously not a good thing, but it allowed us to know when a lot of that debris entered the ocean, and then it ended up arriving in Hawaii, Alaska, the West Coast, and we could actually see what kind of organisms were living on that debris and see if they had made it across. Could they have been a problem for bringing a foreign species to our coasts? So we have a video series that you can see on our website. It's called the Trash Talk series. They're 2-minute videos that give information about different marine debris topics. So the one that's here is about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Kind of tell you some of the things I told you. It's not an island, surface to seafloor. But these are really geared towards students, but I think for anyone that doesn't have knowledge of these issues, they're really nice, quick summaries. Our website is marinedebris.noaa.gov, and we have many ways you can stay in touch with us. There's a sign-up sheet on the table. We send out a newsletter once a month, and we'll keep you up to date on what we're up to. We have a blog. We have all kinds of social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and I'm almost done. So we'll probably talk more about this, but what can you do? Get involved. Tell other people. You could participate in a cleanup. You could switch from plastic bags to reusable bags. Pretty easy. You could bring a reusable mug with you to your favorite coffee shop or bring around water in something like this. And of course, reduce, reuse, recycle, super easy, but the more we do it, the less stuff will end up on the streets or in landfills and then potentially getting out of those places and ending up in the ocean. All right, so I'll stop there. This is my email at the top. I also have business cards on the table, our website, and then the clearinghouse is where we give more details about the projects that we've funded. So if you're curious about what's happened around the country, there's a nice map with information about all the different projects. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I'm Emily. I'm with Salem Sound Coast Watch.